Welcome to a Toxic Talk Tuesday on Chris Fabry Live. Go through the highways and byways and beckon those who would like to live toxin-free and tell them about our get-together here today. We will be joined by my toxic life coach, Miss Toxin-Free 2012, voted by her graduating class at the University of Virginia as most likely to make her own detergent, Andrea Kessel Fabry. Today, it's you and your lawn care, getting rid of pests the natural way, but we're really leaning toward weeds this month and protecting your pets and your children and yourself and learning a thing or two. There's a quiz ahead, and I have a peaceful, queasy feeling that I am not going to do very well on this, so don't touch that dial. There is fun and good-natured humor as well as education straight ahead. Here's how you get involved. And we will be taking calls today. We had a focus group meeting, and the only complaint about our time with Andrea has been people saying we don't get to talk as much with her as you do, and since you're married to her, why don't you guys do that some other time? So the phone line is 1-877-548-3675. 877-548-3675. Online, chrisfabrylive.org. You can link to our guest's website there, chrisfabrylive.org. Trisha McMillan's our producer. Eric Hufford's our engineer. Elizabeth Asaturo is answering your calls at that number. All right, it's time to introduce Andrea Fabry, formerly Andrea Kessel. She is the mother of nine, former co-host of Midday Connection, contributing author to the book Tending the Soul. Andrea, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm very excited about the topic.
I know you are. She now co-hosts Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, along with yours truly, founder and president of Moms Aware, helping people make the connection between toxicity and health and encouraging them on their challenging and often overwhelming journey. Her website, momsaware.org, is linked there. You can find out more about her and her journey. So first of all, welcome. It's great to
have you very much
here. Tell us, Andrea, how did you become interested in today's subject? Or do you have anything you'd like to say to me in terms of an apology about today's topic?
I sent him a choice of those two questions. Now I don't know what to do.
Generally, I don't have our guests
submit
the first question, but I have had this happen in the past.
I thought it would just, you know, I mean, it would help you out. So which would,
let's go with the first one. I'm just,
you don't want the apology? I'm shocked.
No.
Okay. I will do the apology.
Okay.
This shows how disinterested I used to be in today's topic. When we were living in our home in Colorado, Chris would treat the lawn with weed killers, and then he would say, kids, don't go play on the lawn. And I would look at him, and I feel really badly about this, and I'd be like, oh, come on, just relax. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
And
it's still a big, it's a hurt. It's a wound.
It was disrespectful. It was my assumption, oh, come on, let's let the kids have fun. So I'm just here to say I'm sorry.
Well, the other thing was I used to have, because at that time I think we only had Pippin. I said, don't let Pippin go outside right now because I just sprayed for whatever.
And again, I rolled my eyes.
Yes. Yeah, you did. Yeah, it was quite hurt. I've had to work through it. There's a lot of counseling.
There's some toxic issues right there.
So then how did you become interested?
So how did I go from that, which
from
was
there,
the extreme, because you were in balance, obviously. You had a general sense of, hey, let's not have the kids go play right away.
Sure, balance is
so
the right
how
word.
I became interested was 3 months after leaving our home from toxic mold. Now, the subject of toxicology was of great interest to me because we had mycotoxin poisoning, which, by the way, mold uses, toxic mold, mycotoxins to shoot out and kill what's ahead of it in order to grow. So we just happened to be there. So I was understanding something about toxicology and very obviously interested in what happened to us. Well, a toxicologist said to me, now you need to be careful because at schools they use a lot of chemicals. They spray for pesticides, so be careful. Went right over my head, kind of rolled my eyes again. So again, this has been a journey for me. 3 months after we left, it was January 31st, 3 years ago, I had the kids in Arizona. Chris, for those of you who have been listening a long time, remember that Chris was working out of a trailer at the time in front of our house.
Hi.
So we had been apart for 6 weeks while I took the kids and tried to
six of the best weeks of her life.
No. Oh, no.
It was really hard.
So we went to a park. The kids and I went to a park and then out to dinner. And we had been to that park in those 6 weeks, but they were rolling in the grass and having a lot of fun. We went out to dinner and it was pretty sudden. Their eyes started to swell. They put their heads on the table. They were getting rashes. They were sneezing. There were nosebleeds. There were just... And I just couldn't figure it out. And all of a sudden, somebody said, hey, we just rolled in the grass at the park. And I'm sure it's a beautiful grassy park. I mean, it's lovely. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first clue that there's a connection between health. Now, our bodies weren't as sensitive before, but when you've been exposed, your body likes to protect itself after that. So that's what was happening.
So the immune system was brought down, and then when you were exposed to this, and then you can extrapolate, not just with grass and the stuff that's sprayed there, but chemicals that are sprayed on school desks, or you walk into the mall and you hear smell the perfumes, that can put you right flat on your back.
And I consider it a gift now. Now I'm very grateful for it, that our bodies are created this way to let us know when there's a problem. So the next day, Chris came in the morning, drove all night, and we were moving into a different rental home. We moved in. Chris brought everything in. He had brought the mattresses and everything. And I had checked out this house for mold, didn't have any idea about asking about chemicals. Well, that day, so this was a crash course in understanding toxicology. That day, moving in within hours, nosebleeds, profuse nosebleeds, strange rashes.
Breathing problems.
Severe breathing problems. So much so that most of us slept outdoors. And even in Arizona in February, it's very cold. We slept outdoors that night and began to explore what happened. Well,
and this is when I rolled my eyes, because I thought, just come inside, you crazy women. Get back in here. What in the world's going on?
It was me and the girls mostly that went outside. But we were having trouble breathing. So
just a little thing like that.
Asked the homeowner. Well, the first thing we did was check the closet for any chemicals that were in the home stored inside. And sure enough, all of their weed killers, everything was stored in a closet. Well, this is a good lesson. They still leach out. Those fumes still come out. If you do have chemicals, store them in the garage or someplace away.
A shed or something, yeah.
So we took all that out to the garage, hoping that would help. Wasn't helping. Called the homeowner, found out that 4 days previously, he had sprayed indoors on the carpeting for termites. And I called the toxicologist and he said, find out exactly which one was used, looked it up on the internet, long story, exactly our symptoms. And so it clicked. Unfortunately, because of where we were at with our immune system, it wasn't going to work because it was going to take at least 6 months to even get it bearable. And we didn't have that kind of time. So that's when my interest then, not just in mold toxicity, but beyond that, started.
So that's where it started.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad.
So we did leave that house.
Yes, we did.
And found one that they hadn't just sprayed. And I knew to ask that.
And all of those new, they were basically brand new mattresses we left there too, because when I loaded them up in the U-Haul to take them to the next place that we eventually found and got them out, then as the kids were helping us move them into the other house, they started to get nosebleeds again. Immediate reaction. And I know that you're talking to people who are rolling their eyes today.
I get that.
How can this happen? And it's what it shows is our bodies are fearfully and wonderfully made. And you do not have, unless you've had this kind of a thing happen to you, you won't have that same reaction. Your kids, hopefully, prayerfully, won't have that same reaction. But that doesn't mean that you're not reacting to what is in your environment.
And you just need to be aware. Just know that this is still, you have to ask the question, so how much of this do I want my kids around? How much of this do I want in my life? And that's all we're asking. And are there issues that have arisen over my life? For instance, if you were raised in the Midwest near cornfields, and your thyroid shut down. Is there a connection between the pesticides that were sprayed and the endocrine disruption? I'm not saying that's so. Those are the kind of questions worth asking.
And you have a quiz, I understand.
I do. Are you ready for the first question?
No, I'm not, because okay. You have to wait. But is how many
questions? Five.
Got five questions, and today I'm not even going to watch you read the question. I'm going to close my eyes because I am able to, after 30 years, I'm able to get the answer that way.
Which I didn't realize. No wonder he's done so well on these quizzes.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with me, you know, knowing anything. It's just me reading. Okay. All right. So I'm going to give the phone number. If you have a question along the lines specifically about weeds today, you're telling me we're going to put pests off
till next month.
Till
and
June.
Then we're going to have a great program of natural ways to fight pests. We're going to allude to ants today and fleas.
Oh, so good.
We won't leave the whole hour
I'm
without.
So glad that ants and fleas will be included on this broadcast of Chris Fabry Live.
Join the conversation. Call Chris Fabry Live now at 877-LIVE-675, 877-548-3675.
This is a Toxic Talk Tuesday on Chris Fabry Live. And a quiz is coming now, a pop quiz. Get ready. If you're driving, do this in your head. I will be your quiz taker. I've not looked at the questions you're about to hear. All five of them are online, as well as another five, if you want to go and take the quiz. Eric and Tricia have already taken this, done quite well, depending on how you define
well. It was Tricia's worst performance yet.
But. Would you say that this kind of quiz, though, is meant to trick you? Or
no, it's and really, it's not meant for a grade. This is simply, I hope, a fun way to learn.
Okay.
You walk away. Because, again, the issue that I come at this with is just ask questions. I'm not here to say do anything. Just raising questions is very educational and very helpful. That's what science is all about.
I love that. That's what science, just ask questions. That's what science is all about. Okay. All right. Five questions. I'm holding a piece of paper up, so I will not see Andrea ask the questions, although I will hear the intonation and inflection
and
of her voice.
I'm trying.
All right. Here we go. Question number one.
Which of the following is not classified as a pesticide by the Environmental Protection Agency? A, disinfecting wipes. B, mold and mildew remover. C, automatic dishwashing powder. And D, furniture spray.
Okay, one more time. Disinfecting wipes. Give me the four again.
Mold and mildew remover, automatic dishwashing powder, furniture spray. One of those is not classified as a pesticide.
I'll say B, mold and mildew remover.
Sorry. Whoa, this is holding up the paper is working.
I know.
So it's furniture spray.
Is it really?
And the reason is, so this helps with our definition today. Pesticide is a chemical used to prevent, destroy, or repel pests. Pests can be insects, mice, weeds, fungi, microorganisms such as bacteria and viruses. So this is your clue that an antimicrobial hand soap is considered a pesticide.
So as you walk in the grocery store and you pull one of those things to wipe this out, you're using a pesticide.
Yes, because bleach is classified as a chlorine bleach. So,
all right. So
again, today we're talking about fungicides, herbicides, insecticides. It's all one thing.
Now, you said herbicides. We checked it yesterday and they said herbicide. You pronounced the H.
I've heard
herbicides.
It both ways. I'll go with herbicides.
But Eric did say, I thought it was herbicide. Why would you say herb and not herbicide and say herb. So anyway, that's another.
Well, the operative word really is sides because the Latin root word means to annihilate or kill.
Uh-huh.
So you'll notice that all these have that word. And I just think that's important for us to remember as human beings that these chemicals are designed to kill. And so the question has to come up is, will this affect us?
Yes. If it's designed to kill, how good is this for me? And it may be fine.
And remember, there are natural chemicals such as boric acid.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay.
Number two.
According to the EPA, children are exposed to the chemical 2,4-D through lawn care products. If a child is exposed to 2,4-D indoors, the exposure most likely comes from one of these. So are you tracking with that?
Yeah, you gotcha.
Okay. A, drinking water. B, dust on the shoes of the person applying the product. C, diet. D, pet dander.
I'll say diet.
It is dust on the shoes of the person applying the product. So again, I try to make these questions come from EPA or governmental sources, just so you can see that we do, as a nation, basically understand that this is something to be concerned about.
So the EPA is saying, don't come in the house with the shoes that you spray.
Be aware that that's how children are exposed.
How do they know that, though?
Well, I'm just reading what is on the site.
Okay,
I'm sure that's hard to measure.
Okay.
But, you know, this is a good lesson, I believe, in taking your shoes off. I was always the most relaxed person about, oh, don't take your shoes off. Come on in, walk all over our carpet. I never thought about it. It's a good idea. There's nothing wrong with saying, would you mind leaving your shoes at the front door? I'm just saying.
Yeah, so that's the culture that, so if you ever come to our house, folks, remember.
You must take off your
shoes. Maybe in the car, you know, unless
yes.
It's July.
If you don't mind walking on the sidewalk in your socks, that'd
okay,
be great.
Okay, I'm 0 for 2. Number
okay.
3.
The EPA says that this plant oil is effective for repelling mites, fleas, and mosquitoes.
Plant oil, okay.
Okay. Jojoba. We talked about that one at
Christmas.
Starts
with a J, right?
Yes.
Okay.
B, lemongrass. C, cedarwood. D, eucalyptus.
Okay, I'm going to have to say cedarwood.
That was a very good guess, though.
Because I know that
mm-hmm.
deters
good for termites.
Termites. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So which is it, eucalyptus?
It's eucalyptus.
Yeah, of course it is.
Which I can't say enough about.
I can't either.
Those plants, especially peppermint. Eucalyptus is great, but peppermint for ants. So there you have a hint of our next month's program.
Mm-hmm.
When you understand these essential oils and what they do to deter or repel or kill, it's
kill.
A good, well, not always. Sometimes it just sends them in another direction. Say the mice that were in our garage.
Yeah.
I put peppermint plants out there. They were gone.
Sometimes I think she wishes she had put some peppermint out. In our relationship early on, to just send him in another
not
direction.
At all. Thank you.
I think I should get a half for that.
All right,
okay.
You're zero.
As a matter
for
of fact,
three.
Yesterday, the whole program, I was thinking, I'd like to talk about eucalyptus because I can't talk too much about it. Okay, number 4.
Oh, for 3. The first Roundup Ready crop, which means it's able to resist application of the weed killer Roundup, was first marketed in 1996. This biotech soybean was genetically pieced together using this vegetable/flower combination. Again, I don't expect you to know this, but it's raising the question.
Yeah,
so we're going to pair a flower and a vegetable, and we're going to see which one worked to create, and again, you were creating a food,
uh-huh.
A, cauliflower petunia, B, broccoli chrysanthemum, D, romaine lettuce pansy, D, zucchini geranium.
I should go with the pansy just because I like the way it sounds. But let's try the broccoli.
Yep. It's
cauliflower.
Cauliflower and petunia. All right, you ready for
sweet
the 5th?
Petunia. Okay, but why is that? Why is that? You know, you're using two things that are normal and natural to do something that you want it to do.
I have such a passion for the issue of genetic modification.
Oh, I know.
And when you learn, well, let's pull back a little, because this is very recent. Did you notice that it was 1996?
I did, yeah.
And now 94% of all soy grown in this country is genetically modified. This is how fast this has happened, and it's happening in our day. This is not looking back on history. We are one of the few countries in the world to require labeling of GMO. And there's a big movement afoot right now in California, because they may be the first state that says you must say this on the label. At least let us know. And when you pull back, I have to ask, is that how God created the plant? I mean, do we need, if the soybean or alfalfa or whatever it is intact and nutritionally, it has what it needs nutritionally, and we don't really need to improve on the actual nutrition, is there something unnatural about that that may do us harm down the road?
And the answer would be, no, there's nothing wrong with it, except that it is susceptible to pests and things like that. And so is there a way to grow this so that it will adapt, or we can grow it in more in proliferation, you know, grow it more economically or efficiently?
And that's the heart of the question. That's why the genetic modification came about. How can we? And
yes.
For thousands of years, we've grown food without the chemicals.
Well, it's the same question for our cattle, right? I mean, in giving them different shots and the different drugs so that they won't be as susceptible to one disease or another, then you have a healthier cow, right? Well, the question that you're asking, and this is just science, is what is that doing to those who consume the meat from that cow? What is it doing to those who consume the soy from the ground that's been modified in some way to repel whatever it is? That's
very good. And I would like to propose before our last question.
You're going to propose?
Oh, for four.
Oh,
for
we
four. I'm not throwing that. But let me ask this. This is a good word picture, I think, on this issue of genetic modification. Suppose you have a preschooler and you get home a letter and it says, we would like to conduct an experiment using your daughter or son. It's going to be until the age of 18. We would like to feed them a quarter of a teaspoon of a pesticide from now until the age of 18. Now, we have no reason to believe that that's going to be harmful. It's a very small amount. But would you agree? Could you sign on the dotted line for this experiment?
I think
don't know that I would sign up for that.
Pitchforks and signs and all of that would come out because you ain't going to get my child.
But see, this is what we're living in. This is an experiment. We don't have 100 years of several generations to say this is fine. What we do know is that these chemicals, which I mentioned, the 2,4-D, was used in Agent Orange. That's the primary chemical used in that. It's a different blend, different strength and all that, but it's the same chemical. And going back to World War II, we've seen that these kill humans in the right dose. Isn't it presumptuous to say, well, but in small amounts, it's not a big deal? We don't know that.
Okay. Number five.
Hairy fleabane, Johnson grass, rye grass, and mare's tail share this classification. A, super weeds. B, broadleaf grasses. C, plants that produce natural herbicides, and D, genetically modified plants.
C.
Nice guess. They're super weeds, which is the other thing that is happening with, and super weeds.
I saw the movie this weekend.
Are growing, and again, this is like the resistance that occurs if we have a lot of antibiotics. So you know, then we become resistant. So these weeds, again, we're genetically modifying so that a crop can survive a weed killer, basically.
But hasn't Johnson grass been around a long, long time? So you're saying it's...
I think it's a weed, but it's... Well, I haven't... I just know if you look up super weeds, this is one of the classifications. So that's a good question.
And a super weed, again, is what? It's a weed that's been modified?
Any wild plant that has become a virulent weed as a result of acquiring resistance to herbicides through pollination with a genetically modified plant. In other words, it's been... This is how we're created. We adapt in our creation.
Yes.
The plants adapt. And so then they grow these super weeds that are then even harder. So we are building what I think, and this is my opinion here, is that we're creating a chemical dependence. And if we don't stop and look at this, and for the sake of our children, even if it's not affecting us, which maybe it is, sometimes our bodies really are too chemically laden to really let us know intuitively. Let's just go on our intuition, not on studies, because right now you can't have studied this.
So what you're saying that is, and again, this is a person who comes, you're not a toxicologist.
I'm just a mother who saw what poisons can do to my children. And it's amazing what happened to them. And still they carry the effects. That wasn't from a pesticide exposure. However, it carried over into this, and I've seen what happens when we take the chemicals out. And that's the good news of this. We're not beholden. We don't have to wait for our congressmen to take action.
You don't have to
and I'm not
lobby
saying,
and all that.
Because, and let me say this. Our son is dependent on insulin. Now, that's genetically created in a lab.
Yeah.
And without that, he would die. However, I'm using as little of that. We use as little of that as we can. I wouldn't willingly inject him with a synthetic insulin.
Yes. All right. Now, your calls. And we have Diatomaceous Earth coming up. This is Chris Fabry Live, 877-LIVE-675. This is Chris Fabry Live, our special Toxic Talk Tuesday today. We're talking about your lawn, your little garden there, and the garden of your children and yourself and your health. 877-548-3675. And there's a recipe ahead, but let's jump to the phones. In Holland, Michigan, Carol has called. Hi, Carol. What's going on in your life?
Hi. Thank you so much. We have just moved into a new home, and after experiencing the rash personally, we realized that our lawn and surrounding woods are full of poison ivy, and just wondering how can we get rid of it without a lot of chemicals?
Great question. I don't know. And this is, you know, but that's good that I don't know, because the point, I think, is that you're asking the question. And I guarantee you there's an answer. Do you know? Because thousands of years we've dealt with that, and there has to be a way, if not just pulling it out with a heavy gloves to protect yourself and pulling them out, and that would be overwhelming. But I do know, just from briefly looking that up, that the white vinegar is becoming our friend both indoors and outdoors. And so my guess is that that might be a way to go. But I honestly don't know. But good for you for asking.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I'll check that out. I know that it's been used by the Indians as medicine, so I know it has a purpose. But
on the first place that I went to look at that, the question online was poison ivy vegetation killer, and the only three ingredients are salt, liquid detergent, and vinegar. And the, you know, it's got the different
that's
ways.
That's our recipe.
Is that what the recipe is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
That's coming.
Uh-huh. All right. So hang on there, and we will give you the recipe. We'll give you the recipe, Carol. What is this supposed to be for, Andrea?
Weed killer, obviously. And, well, any plant that you don't want, because you have to be careful on good plants. You wouldn't necessarily want to do this. So, Carol, you let us know next month. We're back in June.
Yeah.
How it goes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Thank you. All right, Andrea, tell us about this weed killer then. What's going on? This is not like the Andrea Fabry brand.
No, this was throughout the internet, these three ingredients. Obviously, since you just looked this up, I did try this yesterday because I don't like to recommend something I haven't tried. Now, we are not proactive regarding our weeds. We live in Arizona. It's mostly rocks where we are now, so you know, we'll send the kids out or we'll just go out and pull them out. So that's as much as we've thought or done about our weeds. So this isn't in my world right
Although,
now.
Although Nick has done remember the great big thistle thing that we had?
The tumbleweeds.
Yeah.
That's right.
We had to care for that.
We have a man who does the eco-pest business. He can do 100% botanicals or 90% botanical. We always choose the 100. With the tumbleweeds, they're far enough away, so we picked the 90% and we did fine. So again, these are just choices we have, and I was so glad for the choice. And since it was outdoors, and it worked great, I have to say. And he's coming tomorrow because we've had this, well, it's a preventative spring spray because it's so it works. And he does 100% botanical, all essential oils inside and outside the house.
So it doesn't smell and take your breath away. All right. So
back to the recipe.
Yes, the recipe.
So I did try this yesterday on an Arizona weed, and it is just dead today. Dried and, yeah. So here's
the
recipe.
You're very happy with yourself. Well,
it was very exciting. So here's the recipe. You can write it down. It's also on our website, linked at Chris's website. It's 1 gallon white vinegar, 1/2 cup liquid soap. I recommend Castile soap. And then 2 tablespoons salt. Salt can mess with the pH of the soil, so you want to be careful with your salt. That's not anything you really want to spray into your soil. So it's like anything else. We just have to be aware and careful, and you don't just spray anything without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But that's the proportion. It's a gallon white vinegar. You're adding a little soap, because I remember at the farmer's market, our farmer saying, I gave her some Castile soap and she said, oh, this will get the aphids away. Thank you so much. Hmm. And on her broccoli and cauliflower plants.
Wow. So, and again, if an animal were to, you know, a little bunnies that we have running around in the yard were to come along this, all they'd be chomping on would be vinegar, soap, and salt.
And think you could let your kids go out with this and, hey, spray our weeds. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to worry.
And get a drink. So 1 gallon of white vinegar, 1/2 cup of liquid soap, and 2 tablespoons of salt. I assume you just put this in like a little spray bottle or a bigger container.
And shake it up every time and spray.
And spray and see what happens. And see what happens then on the poison ivy.
I'd love to know for Carol.
I'd love
to know that.
And if it, but what about your grass?
You don't want it on, this is the thing. You want to spray specifically on the weeds.
All right. Bethany is in Washington State in Omak. Hey, Bethany, go right ahead.
Hi. I'm interested in taking up part of my grass to plant a vegetable garden in my yard. And I'm working with a landscaper, and she has suggested spraying Roundup to kill the grass and then tilling it in. And I'm not comfortable with that because I don't want to use the chemicals. But I was in the grocery store the other day and noticed they have herbicides that are labeled as organic. And my question is, would something like that used in a similar way to kill grass and then till it into the soil, would that be equally scary
harmful
as Roundup, or is it?
Now, the main ingredient in Roundup is glyphosate. There are two main weed killers available to us, and that is the 2,4-D that I mentioned, and then glyphosate. And glyphosate is our number one product. It is, if you look at the studies, but I don't worry about studies. What I'm telling you, Bethany, is good for you for thinking about this, because I wouldn't either. The question is, do I have to? So let me give you some suggestions on label reading. This was one of the first things the toxicologist taught me when we encountered the termite spray. He said, read more than, well, just know that there are more chemicals than just what it says on the label. Why? Because any label. So I want you to go in and look at this organic weed killer, because I don't know.
Okay.
Or grass killer, herbicide. And see what the active ingredients are. Chances are it may say essential oils. Great. Then look at inert ingredients. And if it says 5% inert ingredients, that'd be pretty good. Most of the labels will say 90-some percent inert ingredients. And here's the truth about that, is inert ingredients we think of, well, what would you think of when you hear that word?
That they're just sitting there not doing anything.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
and we would think it's mostly water, and that would be fine. Water and essential oil sounds great to me. The truth is, it's up to 3,000 chemicals are classified as inert ingredients, and typically in one product, it's around 200 to 300 inert ingredients that they don't have to list because of trade secrets. And this goes back to, remember, fragrances on a label, up to 3,000 chemicals qualify as a fragrance, and usually 200 to 300 chemicals go into that term. So check the inert ingredients, and quite honestly, I would, and you could feel free to call the company and say, what exactly is in your inert ingredients? Pursue this. Okay. Don't hesitate.
You've done that before, haven't you?
I have, not on inert ingredients, but I have for several of our foods, you know, our beef. So tell me how they're raised, and are they grass finished or grass fed and all that. I feel fine about being proactive for my family, just like you're being, Bethany.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. So what would you suggest then that she do? Go out and buy like 50 gallons of
white vinegar?
White vinegar.
Maybe. And I will say that on the Safe Lawn websites, one of the first things they suggest is growing a garden. So you're on the right track with that. Why not use that space to grow food for you and your family?
If you just till, I'm trying to remember what my dad used to do.
Well, could you just dig out the grass? Yeah, I'm not.
You could. If you till it and just turn it under, you have exposed earth there, but you still got all of the weeds then that are growing underneath there. So they're going to, you know, it'll find a way out. So you want to try to kill that. And what my dad used to do was he'd have a bonfire. And he would put all of the, you know, the wood up there, and he would just burn it. Burning, and this was for the plant bed, so it was, you can't go out and burn a whole field. But if it's a very small vegetable garden, you probably could do this in a controlled kind of way. You'd have to, and I'm not suggesting, kids, that you go out and do this.
Your yard.
But this is how he did it. And all of that, all of the nutrients from the fire and the wood got down into the soil as well, and it helped those plants then grow, and the little seedlings, so that then you transplanted those. I know a lot more than you think.
Well, I know.
Do.
I love that you were raised on this farm.
I went 0-5 on that quiz, but I know how to burn a plant bed. This is Chris Fabry Live. Andrea Fabry joining us today. Hope you will too.
Call 877-LIVE-675 to reach Chris Fabry Live. That's 877-LIVE-675.
Coming up next month on our Toxic Talk Tuesday, Andrea Fabry will be talking about your pests. And here's Rachel. This is just a tease for next month. We have an ant problem. I hate to use pest sprays. I've tried using diatomaceous earth, and I love saying that word. Have you used it, and what are your thoughts on using it to keep pests from entering the home?
From what I've read, I have diatomaceous earth. I put a little in our puppy's food, the little, because it's a wonderful natural. It's from fossils, shells, or, you know, it's a natural thing. I would have no trouble putting it around the house. I wouldn't, because of what I know about it, and I'm not the expert. But so far, it has been great for us. I've not tried it with ants. I go back to, for us, the peppermint was great. Borax and some sugar is very good. Again, this goes back to a natural pesticide. Borax is something that I don't use in skincare products for this reason, but I use it in my laundry soap because it's just a little bit and I feel like it gets clean. So there, again, this is just sharing knowledge with one another. That's what we're here for, rather than just assuming it has to be a certain way. And this is all I've known. We need to be sharing more. And again, going back to the question Anne's asking. So what do you think of that? And I don't know, but I'm sure there's an answer. So far, so good for us.
I'm listening to your show where you're talking about living with pesticides. A question, we've done well at home in this area, but the kids go to a private school where chemical cleaners are used, including by the kids during cleanup time.
We're in a private school too. I went to the principal. Now, we had specific health needs, so I kind of had this forum to say, here's where we are. Our kids will get nosebleeds around some of these chemicals. And she was great. Okay, well, tell me what to use. So we made up a bunch of bottles. That's what the kids are using. And it's all white vinegar with some essential oil, if I have time to put it. Now they're making their own. And when it came to pesticide spraying, again, this is where parents, I think, can be on the offense because people just don't know. And so I went and I said, we are familiar with this business around town. They use 100% botanical. Would you be open to spraying? They had an ant problem. She called him. And of course, that was complete peace of mind for us, for our kids, but not just for our kids, for all the kids.
For all. Bethany, here's Debbie, who wrote us on Facebook. You can rent a sod cutter. Debbie wanted to know what to do with those. She didn't want to spray Roundup out there. You can rent a sod cutter at most rental places, and it removes the grass under the root and leaves dirt, perfect for creating a garden. Let's go to Oregon. Josh is on the line. Hey, Josh, go right ahead.
How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
Hi, Josh.
Yeah, you had brought up earlier, you were talking about Roundup Ready modified crops and things. And I work for a chemical company, and we own an extermination company, my wife and I. And honestly, some of the spraying, the purpose behind it is the out-of-control weed population. If we weren't spraying some of the crops and these things, some of this ground that yields, say, 100 bushel wheat, you wouldn't get 20 bushels out of, and you probably get 80 bushels worth of mustard and whatever else is in that field.
How did these crops grow before, say, you know, in the 1800s? I'm just asking because I haven't.
Well, you had big crew. Well, here in the valley that I live in, they had teams of horses that went through. And then the kids, this is why they actually have summer vacation, is they would send all these kids out and they would roll through these fields and pull weeds and water things. And I mean, it took an army of people to grow the crops that we grow now with minimal effort.
Exactly. Yes, that's so true. It's changed so much. And so I certainly respect what you're doing. What about integrated pest management? What are your thoughts on that?
IPMs, I think, are a great idea. Like you were talking about gardens earlier and the things you could do. As far as weed control, the burning is really good. I do that with mine. And then you can plant marigolds around your garden for like bugs and things like that.
Aphids, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I really don't like the insecticides on my garden. And then soap and things like that you can spray on for aphids and some of the earwigs and mealbugs that get in there.
So as I understand it, integrated pest management is just, you know, used as a last resort. Is that how you see it?
Well, yeah, it's all about economic thresholds. If a bug population or a pest population gets to a point where you can't control it with natural means, then you may use some form of chemical control in combination with something else. Like around a house, you may cut debris or trees out from away from the house so that those pests aren't getting into your home, you know. And if the population of that pest is past a certain level, then you go ahead and use some form of chemical control around the house.
Great. Well, thank you for calling. It's great to hear.
I guess this goes back, though, you know, just again, you're asking us to step back and look at the big picture. If I can go to the store and purchase a ready-to-cook meal and with a little thing on top and punch a hole in it and put it in the microwave, and 3 minutes and a half later, I have something that I can eat and then go on about my business. If I can buy something in a bottle at the store and spray rather than bending over and, you know, doing all that or making a fire, it's so much easier. Why would you go to the trouble to get kids and horses out and roll around?
And I assure you, I would never have embarked on this had there not been a reason. I mean, there isn't a rational reason on that. It is far easier.
Yes.
In the long run, not necessarily, though. And
in the long run, meaning health-wise, our health.
And
so are you trying to put Josh out of business here? Are you trying all of the lawn care companies and the pesticide people who come in and you see them every day? Are these evil people, Andrea?
I'm just encouraging us in this day and age, and I feel almost called to this place, and it's not always fun or easy to be asking. And that's where I come back to awareness. It's better to know. And then you can choose. And there may be a time, just like we chose the chemical option out there on the tumbleweeds for that little bit. We chose it.
Yeah.
We knew it. We asked exactly what's in there. He gave us all of that information. So the problem is we don't know a lot about our labels and what's in it. And it is very daunting to go back to some of these old ways of doing things.
Okay, I know we're going to talk about pests and pets next month, but Dee Dee asks, your wife said she put something in the dog food, the word you love to say, but she didn't say why she put it in or what she does.
Worms. It's a natural deworming.
Diatomaceous earth.
Food grade.
It's
used in chlorine pools a lot.
Now, this is just like a little
it's
bit.
Clay. It's
clay. I'm saying in the dog's food.
Oh, a tiny bit.
Just a little dusting.
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
And what do you feed your dog, Andrea?
I feed him everything that we eat. Fermented food, whole food. A variety.
Some raw meat at times.
Raw meat, if I feel very good about that.
And cooked meat, too.
Actually, dogs do better with, you know, I don't worry too much. Dogs are different than us as far as raw meat. But if it's good quality meat, I don't feed him any grains. He is a grain-free puppy.
Your grain-free pet. They could write a book.
I know.
You and your grain-free pet. Okay. Anything else? That's the only other email that I wanted to... Anything else that you'd like?
So again, the weed killer recipe, we could go over that again
right
in case
ahead.
Someone was driving. It's 1 gallon white vinegar, 1/2 cup Castile soap, liquid Castile soap, and 2 tablespoons salt. And there are so many websites out there, organizations here to help. Because again, I don't know what to do. This is the only way I know. you get into this, these families, these people who just really want to share their knowledge. And that's what the internet is so great for.
The EPA also suggests, and this is on your website, if you go to chrisfabrylive.org and click on the link, to keep grass at a height of 3 inches. I think most people love to have like a golf course like look, and their grass is not 3 inches tall. Make sure your mowing blades are sharp here as we start this mowing season. Water 1 inch per week on average, whatever that means. Allow your lawn to go dormant in July and August, which means what? You don't
let
cut
it, go.
It. Don't cut it. And consider non-chemical pest weed control
this
methods.
This is from the EPA. Again, I love to see this. They're suggesting consider non-chemical pest weed control methods.
What
I
is
love that.
Grass cycling?
That's leaving the grass cuttings on the lawn. You know how we like to
bag it
and get put it somewhere else? Leave it.
What does that
Very
do?
Very nourishing.
What does that
nourishing.
Do, Andrea?
Well, as far as I know, again, we're getting out of my field of expertise, but from what I've read, it's very nourishing. Leave it.
Are there any weeds that you eat?
Dandelions are very nutritious. There's a study being done on its connection with cancer, healing, cancer at least help. It's amazing. It's one of the top four greens is dandelion greens
really?
For juicing.
So, but not that you don't eat the little things that blow away.
This is the leaf. We're talking dandelion leaf, stinging nettle, and purslane. Very good.
Oh, purslane, of course. And diatomaceous earth. You've heard it all here. It's been fascinating, Andrea. Come on back with us again next month, will you?
Thank you for having me.
Write it on your calendar, June 12, I think. Chris Fabry Live is a production of Moody Radio in Chicago. Thanks a lot for listening.